Binder and others, Joseph W. Stewart, Appellant Counsel, Mary Ellen Willman, Marla J. Diaz, Appellate Counsel.
May it please the Court, my name is Joe Stewart. I'm representing the appellant in this case, Stephen Gray. Your Honors, this is a case that involves the subject matter jurisdiction of the Commissioner of Counts in Virginia. I have not been able to find a case, a reported case, where the Court has addressed this specific issue. The facts of the case are very simple. Albert Bonflet died in 2012. After his death, an administrator was qualified for his estate. Subsequently, the administrator discovered a will, and after some time, successfully probated the will before the court. And then, after the will was accepted for probate, the administrator filed a number of documents with the Commissioner of Accounts, among which was something styled a petition for aid and direction. In the petition, the administrator asked the commissioner for to construe the will of Mr. Bonflet, specifically whether any provisions had lapsed or failed, as well as to determine the heirs at law of Mr. Bonflet. Subsequently, the commissioner held a hearing on those issues, issued a report, and exceptions were taken to the report. The court confirmed the commissioner's report on the findings of the commissioner. The commissioner also held a subsequent hearing on debts and demands, and as part of that report, he determined or opined that the estate was ready to be distributed to the heirs at law, the beneficiaries of the estate, per his prior report. The court also confirmed, notwithstanding the exceptions taken to that report, The second exceptions taken went directly to the subject matter jurisdiction of the Commissioner of Accounts. A commissioner in Virginia is an office created by statute. It's not a constitutional office. And the limits of a commissioner's authority and duties are set forth in 64.2-1200 of the code and following. And fundamentally, what 64.2-1200 says that a commissioner of accounts shall have general supervision of all fiduciaries admitted to qualify in the court or before the clerk of the circuit court and shall make all ex parte settlements of accounts. So that's the fundamental authority and duty of a commissioner of accounts, that is to say, to review periodic accountings filed by a fiduciary whom the court has appointed or whom the clerk has qualified. And
now, you concede the position that if there had been a referral, that the authority would have been there to do what this commissioner did. Well, correct?
I think if the court had made a referral under the separate statute, 801-607 and following, then conceivably the court could refer matters to a commissioner, although I know of no reported case.
Well, I don't either. I think it is unusual, and when I read it, I said, well, that's not the usual way it's done.
No.
But there's a statute out there, and the statute is what I think you need to address, because the statute, I'm going to read it, any interested person or the next friend of an interested person may, before the Commissioner of Accounts, insist upon or object to anything which could be insisted upon or objected to by such person if the Commissioner of Accounts were acting under an order of the circuit court for the settlement, etc., etc. It seems to be pretty clear to me that it's no longer necessary to have a referral from a circuit court.
Well, actually, Your Honor, it would be, because settlement of accounts is a term of art. And in my opening brief and in the responsive brief, we describe exactly what that is. That is to say that it is the commissioner's review of an accounting filed by a fiduciary, and that is to say to make sure that it's in proper form, that it's mathematically correct, that the numbers reflected in the accounting are are appropriate given any normal limits that would be applied under the circumstances, for example, for compensation of a fiduciary. So that's what the commissioner does. A settlement of accounts is just that. That is to say, it's a review of an accounting of what a fiduciary has done.
What if you believe that the fiduciary is making a payment to a person who's not entitled to payment? Can't you object to that?
You can indeed. So you can object to that based on, but the commissioner's operating out of one of two things in an estate context. That is to say, either a list of heirs, if the decedent died without a will, or the will itself, if there is a will admitted to probate. So the commissioner, as anybody else, can read the will to see who the beneficiaries are, or if there is no will, look at the list of heirs. But for example, the determination of heirs, the commissioner of accounts, there is no reported case in Virginia of a commissioner determining heirs. That's always the court. It's the province of the court to do so, where there's some question about who the heirs of a
Could a chancellor refer exactly that problem, that dispute, to a commissioner of accounts in the same way he or she could refer it to a commissioner in chancery?
It's conceivable. But again, that would be a special referral under 801-607.
Well, then, yeah. Right. But that would imply to me that the absence of the referral order may possibly implicate active jurisdiction, but would not implicate the subject matter jurisdiction of the Commissioner of Accounts, which would mean it can be waived.
Well, no, this all goes to subject matter jurisdiction, Your Honor, because it goes to the type of cases that the commissioner can hear. They're very limited, okay?
But maybe I misunderstood you. I apologize. I thought that if there had been an express special order of reference of this exact dispute to a commissioner of accounts rather than a commissioner of chancery, what's your position? Would that not be appropriate? Could not?
Well, that could not happen. There's no provision in the code for a referral to a commissioner of accounts. There is a provision in the code for a referral to a commissioner in chancery. And there's a special procedure to do that. There has to be good cause shown. There has to be either agreement amongst the parties, in addition to the good cause shown, or a motion. The court can do it on its own on a finding of good cause to a commissioner in chancery. And as you know, Your Honor, commissioners in chancery traditionally have been received, the kinds of cases that they receive either involve accountings outside of the Commissioner of Accounts process, that is for fiduciaries or co-tenants, or sometimes settling property issues or assets and the like. So there is no reported case I could find in 250 years of jurisprudence, or even of a Commissioner of Chancery construing a will or determining heirs. That's an equitable power of the court. But in any case, in this case, a court can't refer a matter to a commissioner of accounts. There's no statutory authority for that.
But at the end of the day, commissioners of accounts and commissioners in chancery, even if they get a referral properly, they make a report to the circuit court, and the circuit court's ruling is the binding decision, right?
In a normal case, if a petition were filed with the court and the court referred it to a commissioner in chancery, and there was a report issued and confirmed, then in that case, there is subject matter jurisdiction because the court has the jurisdiction to entertain the petition. Here, again, the petition was never filed with the court and never heard by the court. It was filed directly with the Commissioner of Accounts.
Is there a financial, practical difference between you pay your filing fee and off you go to court, whereas when you go to the Commissioner of accounts, you have to pay all their fees, et cetera, in a way that you don't have to do when you're before a circuit court? Or is it the same?
Well, you would have to file the petition with the court through the filing fees and service fees that are required for a petition for aid and direction. None of that happened here.
Now, my point is, from the standpoint of the litigants, if you seek aid and direction from a court, you pay your filing fee, you have to pay your lawyers and have it tried and adjudicated. If you proceed before a commissioner of accounts, don't they have to get paid at a certain hourly rate, etc.? And
yes.
So it's quite likely considerably more expensive because you have this extra third-party lawyer who's the commissioner of accounts who needs to be paid for their time.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So this would have a fairly significant impact as a practical matter if we validate this particular approach.
Yes, Your Honor. I had not thought of that, but economically.
I'm just trying to figure out practically how this would work out.
Did the Commissioner of Accounts actually charge a fee for issuing the report?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I thought your answer to Justice Goodwin's question was, and you correct me if I misunderstood, he asked if in the role as a Commissioner of Accounts there was an objection made to a payment to a person on the grounds that they are not a proper heir. Could they decide that? And your answer was yes.
As to the accounting, right. So any objection to the accounting, that and which would include distributions made.
Well, but we're not talking about the nature of the referral, if it is a referral. We're talking about the subject matter of the decision. It appeared to me that what you said is that it's within the Commissioner of Accounts' authority to decide if a particular person is a proper heir.
No. That's nowhere to be found.
How do you reconcile that with the answer?
No, I'm saying, to answer your question, if the heir is already established, or, that is in the case of an intestacy, or if
established
they...
Established how?
Pardon me? By a list of heirs. So the way you establish heirs is by a list of heirs filed with a court, or separately, a separate proceeding filed with the court for determination of heirs. So at my citations to, for example, Lamb on probate, Harrison on wills and trust and administration in Virginia, the two authoritative treatises in Virginia all point to the court has that power, only the court, the circuit court, to determine who the heirs are. So the Commissioner of Accounts has no authority to do it. He has to operate off of a list of heirs, an order of the court finding the heirs, who they are, or if there is a will, what does the will say? Who does it name? But if there were a question about who the beneficiaries were, the heirs are, that's a matter only for the court to rule on, not the Commissioner.
The Chancellor here didn't do a de novo analysis of any of this, is what you're saying.
That's correct.
So why isn't that really the appeal? Instead of worrying about what did or didn't happen when the Commission of Accounts issued its report, whether it had or didn't have initial jurisdiction, whether it was active or subject matter, the bottom line is the Chancellor just rubber stamped it and didn't make a de novo review, and no matter what, that at least should happen.
Right. Well, because, Your Honor, it goes to the court's jurisdiction. In this case, is entirely derivative of the commissioners. So that is to say...
See, I'm not following that.
Okay, well, that's the case of Pierce versus Fannie Mae without the issues that were regarding title and possession in that case. In other words, the court never heard the petition ever. The petition is not in the court's file because it was never filed with the court. So the court on review merely reviewed the report of the Commissioner of Accounts. Okay.
Did you say that the court could not have referred this issue to the Commissioner of Accounts?
In this case, the answer is yes, it could not have referred the issue to the Commissioner of Accounts because there was no petition before the court.
Let's assume there was a petition.
If there were a petition before the court, Your Honor, then conceivably it could be done, although... it's never done in Virginia.
If it conceivably could be done, we go back to just the Chief Justice's question, why doesn't 1209 allow it to happen in the absence of an order?
Because the subject matter jurisdiction, as you know, Your Honor, of any tribunal is whatever is expressly given.
But if
statute,
it could be
right.
done, then the court has subject matter jurisdiction, and therefore, if it refers it, the Commission of Accounts has subject matter jurisdiction, if it can be done.
Well, again, in this case, it couldn't have been done because there was no petition, but if the petition were filed with the court, could the court refer it to a commissioner in chancery? Yes, conceivably.
Commissioner of Accounts is what we're asking.
No, there's no provision for it.
Is this analogous to, let's say, a magistrate who normally does bail and so on? The parties go before the magistrate and have a personal injury case adjudicated. The magistrate has no authority to do any of that. And then the report from the magistrate goes up to the circuit court, hey, validate this or invalidate it. I mean, is that the analogy to your...
Yes. Because, again, the report, in this case, the report of the commissioner, there was no subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, let's take that example. It goes up to the circuit court, and the circuit court validates what the magistrate did. The circuit court has subject matter jurisdiction, whether it was a personal injury case or whatever. The circuit court has subject matter jurisdiction. You can appeal that to us to say the process was improper, but it does not affect the jurisdiction of the court to enter the order.
Well, it does under Parrish versus Fannie Mae. In other words, what you stated just last year is that the jurisdiction of a circuit court in that case on an appeal from a general district court is only the jurisdiction that the general district court
has. But in
the
example that was given, it wasn't an appeal.
Well, it's in the nature of appeal. You're right, Your Honor. I mean, strictly speaking, is it? No, but again, the court never hears the petition and never refers the matter. It simply is filed with the commissioner of account.
In my example, the circuit court certainly would have jurisdiction to adjudicate a personal injury case. Would the circuit court have subject matter jurisdiction to hear a report from a magistrate adjudicating a personal injury case?
Well, again, what they're looking at is a blank piece of paper under the court's consistent rulings. If the commissioner of accounts, in this case, had no subject matter jurisdiction, then whatever he wrote down was a nothing. So the court, in reviewing the nothing, or doesn't matter whether they confirm it or the nothing or change it, it's still a nothing. That's what this court has said time and time again, except that it's never, this precise issue of the Commissioner of Accounts jurisdiction has never come up, and that's a very limited jurisdiction to reviewing accounts and considering objections to an account. That's not what happened here. Those were not the issues before the Commissioner.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Ms. Diaz.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Marla Diaz. I'm here on behalf of the appellees, specifically the intestate heirs in this particular matter. Your Honors, I think you really have focused on what the major issue here is when it comes to determining the response to the arguments that are being made by the appellant as to whether or not the commissioner had subject matter jurisdiction to issue this. And it is what is contained within the statutory authority for the commissioner of accounts. And I do think there are three real relevant provisions that I would ask the court to attend to. The first of which, Your Honor, is the specific 64.2-1200 section, which creates for the Commissioner of Account general supervision, is the language that's used, of all fiduciaries. Specifically, that language, Your Honor, is general supervision. I think that is very relevant because it talks about the scope of what the fiduciaries are, what the commissioner's responsibilities are. In Section B of that same 1200, it then goes on and talks about each commissioner of account shall retain the power of supervision over every account, matter, or thing referred to him. We then go to the 1209 section, which talks about the fact that when you are dealing with objections or interests presented by any interested party to the estate, the commissioner at that point has the opportunity to review any issue, account, insist upon, or objected to, anything which could be insisted upon or objected to by such interested person.
Right, but it doesn't stop there. It says, for the settlement of a fiduciary's account. And you're putting a whole lot of weight. I mean, a petition for aid and direction is ordinarily, traditionally not thought of as the settlement of the fiduciary's account. It's something different.
And, Your Honor, I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head in terms of what is the focus here. Is what does that phrase mean, settlement of the fiduciary's account, and how broad is that in terms of the scope that's given to the court? And that's where I think we look at this court's prior decisions in Nicholas versus Nicholas and the Carter Administrative versus Skillman case, because in both of those two cases, this court took a look at what the scope of a commissioner of accounts responsibilities were under this statutory scheme and talked about what is meant by the settlement of fiduciary's accounts. And in that, they say the statute is full, ample, and complete. It guards and protects every interest as amply as could have been done by a formal suit in chancery. So this court, when previously reviewing the statutory scheme, has decided that the commissioner's responsibilities in terms of settlement of the fiduciary's accounts are broad. and that the responsibilities and the authority that the commissioner has to issue a report to the court are broad. So for those reasons...
What do we really mean by that, that all will contests and disputes, state disputes that have for 200 years been litigated to chancellors are now going to be litigated in front of lawyers?
And
who the litigants have to pay for the privilege of having their dispute litigated?
And, Your Honor, I with the appellant's counsel, I'm in the same place that I haven't seen a specific case that's come up to this court where a petition for aid and guidance has ever been addressed to a commissioner of account. But I can't suggest to you that that's never been a matter upon which a commissioner of account has issued a report to the circuit court.
My question is, what under your broad interpretation of settlement of fiduciary accounts would be excluded? Because if we took literally that quote that you have that's in the opinion, mm-hmm. it means everything is there. It means you can litigate every contest, and all the hundreds and hundreds of cases we've had coming from chancellors really could have been litigated. And the part that bugs me a little bit, I have to confess, is you got to pay for the judge, who's a lawyer, to litigate it for you, and then you have to go to a court and litigate it again. So there's a little bit of dysfunction built into the system naturally. It's just so jarringly different from the expectations.
And let me address.
But isn't part of your answer that is anyone who was did not want it heard by a commissioner could ask the circuit court to hear it?
They could, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And I think there's two parts. But I think the first part is exactly what you've said, is that you could, and it's anticipated in the Carter administrative case that in the event that there's an independent equity, you can file a suit before the court and ask that that issue be addressed by the court.
If the other side brings it up with the commission of account, sets up basically a trial in the commission of account's law office, and you go to the circuit court judge, if we rule for you, the circuit court judge can say, I'm delighted to leave it there for about 6 months, see if you guys work this out, and then I'll hear it later.
Well, Your Honor, if the party files a complaint in the circuit court and asks the circuit court to address it...
No, I'm talking about if the dispute arises during the settlement of fiduciary accounts and the other side wants it litigated there and you go, I do not want it litigated here. And you go to the circuit court and you tell the circuit court judge that I don't want to litigate this in front of your commissioner. The circuit court could say under, I think, tell me if I'm misunderstanding mm-hmm. your approach, well... We'll just let it litigate there for a year or two, and then I'll get a report and pass on that later.
And I suppose ostensibly they could, in the same way that the circuit court could get a decree of reference at the very beginning of the petition for aid and guidance and send it to the commissioner's office if they determine that's the more efficient way to handle it. And I would say, Your Honor, I think there's also a second part of this that I have to disagree with the comments that were made earlier in response to Your Honor's question. I don't think necessarily, even though you do have to pay for a commissioner of account, that it's creating a more significant cost, because in a lot of ways a commissioner's of account proceeding is a more efficient proceeding that has less length, yet less discovery, and ultimately the reason that we have commissioners of account is because the court has an expertise that it is relying upon in these commissioners of account.
Tell me if I'm right or wrong on this, and I don't know. Isn't the norm a percentage of the account?
Often that's correct.
So if they're going to get the percentage of the account just by having their staff review the interim filings and the final accounting, and now you set up basically a litigation.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to get any paid anymore for that. They're still going to get their percentage.
Why not? I'm going to start billing by the hour on this one the same way a commissioner of chancery might do.
They'd still have to apply for the court for the approval of those additional amounts. If you're trying to suggest that it's something over and above the percentage that they typically get and they're trying to ask for more than that, then they would be responsible for asking the court to get that additional fee.
Does the record have anything to say on that subject in this one?
No, sir, it does not.
Isn't there a statute
that
addresses?
I mean, the Judicial Council of Virginia approves the schedule. But it seems to me that that's a red herring. The question is the power to do it in the first place. And let me bring you back to that question, if
yes,
I might.
Sir.
Because... Did I hear you say that, in answer to the question, that if you could hear a petition for aid and guidance, that it makes sense that you could also, the Commissioner of Accounts could hear a will contest if the parties wanted to bring it there?
If they could, if they wanted to, Your Honor, yes, I believe they could.
And that's the choice of the one who is the petitioner?
That's correct.
Well, suppose there's an issue out of chancery.
if there's an issue out of chancery,
yeah,
Your Honor.
Suppose the interested parties say, no, you brought it here, but I want an issue out of chancery, I want a jury.
Then ostensibly you could do that, Your Honor, if there was an issue out of chancery.
A jury and the Commissioner of Accounts?
No, sir, I think if you're going to take an issue out, if you're going to ask for an issue out of chancery, you've got at that point be before the circuit court in order to get the jury impaneled for the purposes of hearing the factual issues involved.
Well, how do you get there?
And I think, Your Honor, this is going to get back to the situation that we've got here, which is, if you want the court in equity to address it, and if you want an issue out of chancery, then you're going to need to file a petition with the circuit court and ask the circuit court to handle this issue in lieu of having the
But what if your opponent beat you? Because you got 2-4 now under your theory, right? So it's the race to the commissioner or to the circuit court. And so you want to be in circuit court, but your opponent beat you to the punch and is before the Commissioner of Accounts. What's the procedure to remove it to circuit court in that kind of scenario?
And I think that the procedure is the one that is identified in Nicholas and in the Carter administration, which is the filing of a complaint in the circuit court and asking the court to identify an independent equity, for example, a matter in a chancery that you want to have handled, or that you want the court to handle the issue itself.
So I guess you would have to ask the commissioner to stay his or her hand while that gets resolved in the circuit court.
I think potentially you might have to do that, yes, Your Honor. But I think filing the complaint, would probably have that effect as well.
What about situations of undue influence? Is that something that could be pursued before the commissioner as well?
I suppose possibly it could, because the language in this is quite broad in terms of both in 1209 and in 1210, Your Honor. Both of them talk, if you look at the language in 1210, which we haven't discussed yet, the final sentence of that authorizes, under the consideration of debts and demands, along with any matters specially stated deemed pertinent by the Commissioner of Accounts or that an interested party may require.
And just to put my cards on the table, it's not that your reading of the statute is completely implausible, but it sounds like the sky's the limit in terms of what the commissioners can do, and no one has noticed for all these years, and so this is this sort of new thing under the sun, and that seems jarring to me.
And Your Honor, I do have to disagree that I think it hasn't. It is not something that people haven't noticed. I think it's something that people have been using for years and years. And this is the first time since 1937 that this court has had the opportunity to take a look at whether or not that jurisdiction exists within the Commissioner of Accounts. And the decisions that this court had in 1937 and in 1908. Acknowledged and said, yes, the Commissioner of Account is intended to have this by the General Assembly.
But what were the specific litigable issues in those cases? Were they will contests? Were they determination of heirs?
Well, one of them was a determination of heirs case, Your Honor. In the Carter administrator case, that was a case that involved heirs that came back and filed a suit in the circuit court to challenge the settlement of accounts that had been done by the Commissioner of Accounts on the basis that the Commissioner of Accounts had failed to identify accurately the heirs to the estate. And the court said that was within the Commissioner of Accounts' jurisdiction to make a determination in support of the administrator as to who the heirs were and to approve the report that was subsequently sent up to the circuit court justifying the distribution made to those heirs. And the court upheld that distribution and dismissed the case that was brought by the heirs who later asserted themselves.
Well, while there may be no bright line, are there no limited principles at all? I mean, there is not the phrase settlement of judiciary accounts, quote, unquote, a term of art with some limiting principle? Does it really mean what you're saying, which is, no, actually it means any litigation involving an estate?
And I think when it comes to anything that the fiduciary needs for the purposes of settling the accounts, which may very well include an identification of the beneficiaries, an understanding and interpretation of the will, and the debts and demands.
All will disputes are now within the term settlement of fiduciary accounts.
And I think, Your Honor, I would argue that they have been something that the General Assembly has contemplated being within the control and power of the Commissioner of Accounts. Again, as a party that has concurrent jurisdiction with the circuit court and is acting in support of the circuit court, so that ultimately it has to go through the circuit court for approval before that order is final.
Well, isn't the point that the Commissioner of Accounts is not a lower tribunal of limited jurisdiction?
Absolutely, they're not.
In fact, they only have the power to do what the Circuit Court asks them to do in the context of the statute.
Or what the General Assembly has given them the power to do. That's correct. Yeah. And
Counsel, if they can do it without a referral from the Circuit Court, so at the point they get that request from the parties, the Circuit Court has not ordered them to do anything, is your answer still that their subject matter jurisdiction is coextensive with that of the Circuit Court without an order by virtue of 1209?
It is, Your Honor, because 1209 anticipates that if the Commissioner of Accounts could be referred that matter as part of the assistance of the settlement of the fiduciary accounts, then they don't need that order in order to be able to address that question as part of the report that they're going to submit.
And you get that from the reading of the language in Carter's case?
I get that from a reading, Your Honor, of 1209 plus this Court's prior decisions in Nicholas and Carter's.
Did Carter's discuss the meaning of for the settlement of a fiduciary's account?
Specifically, Your Honor, did not. No. That language was not something that was discussed in that particular case.
Well, petition for aid and guidance is often the vehicle used to determine errors.
Yes, sir.
So what you got in Carter's case is a prior decision of this Court that says the Commissioner of Accounts has an independent authority to determine errors. It's ordinarily done by a petition for aid and guidance. This is a petition for aid and guidance.
Yes, sir.
That's,
I think that's
your
correct
position. You say the statute supports it in addition to the case law.
I think that all of that is correct, Your Honor.
Questions go to the limiting principle beyond aid and guidance in Carter's case and in this case. Your argument is there really is no limiting principle.
No, Your Honor, I think there's – I wouldn't suggest that the Commissioner of Accounts can take up any issue anytime, anywhere, but I think when you look at the language of 1209 and 1210, which talk about any interested person who has the ability to insist upon or object to anything in front of that commissioner – so presumably, if I'm a beneficiary, I can go to the Commissioner of Accounts and say, I object to the distribution that's being made by the administrator because I believe I'm a beneficiary, and he's determined that I'm not a beneficiary. That's something I, as an interested person, am allowed to object to. This statute says the Commissioner of Accounts can rule on that.
If it were that broad, why would they need the language for the settlement of a fiduciary's account?
I take
that out, and it would then read as you are saying.
And, Your Honor, I would say that that language is important because it talks about what the commissioner's responsibilities are with regard to, generally, the settlement of the fiduciary's accounts. I think it is something that is relevant and part of the determination that the commissioner's in doing in this case. And, again, not anything outside the scope of that. This talks about assisting the administrator in determining how they settle those accounts, who they give the money to, what bills they pay. They're entitled to seek the assistance of the commissioner in determining what is the appropriate way to do that. And that can include, as it did in this particular case, a determination as to the appropriate guidance for reading and construing the will. And again, ultimately subject to the review and the approval by the Circuit Court. So,
I believe I'm out of time, but thank you all very much. Both of you have made really good arguments before the Court and good briefs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The Court will be in recess until 11:15.
All rise.